one of the reasons I wanted to be able to talk at the same time. But I don't have that technology. I don't know what I'm doing. It's okay. All perfect. Anyway, it is time now to turn the mic over to you, Rev. Phil Frisk, and thank you guys so much for being here, and happy Sunday.
Well, thank you, Lynn, and welcome, everyone. Thank you for being here at our weekly gathering of Awakening Together. Every Sunday, we meet right here in the Pal Talk Room, and we join together online with a worship service. We have music and fellowship, teaching and meditation and contemplation. It's a time for being together, and it's what we call a gathering. So let's greet each other as we join together in our online sanctuary for our weekly assembly. And if this were a physical room instead of a virtual room, we would turn to the people next to us and give them a warm greeting. And we use the Pal Talk message board to send our greetings to each other. The purpose of Awakening Together is to awaken to our one true self. We are an online universal assembly of peers dedicated to recognizing and embracing universal wisdom, regardless of the form in which it appears. I believe Barb DeWater is our administrator today, and she may link post to our website where you can read more about our purpose and values. And for those of you that are listening on the radio, the website link is www.awakening-together.org, and then look for About Us and Purpose and Values on the menu screen. So we're very happy to have you join us formally. If you're not already a member, you can join at the Join Us link on our website. One of the five basic core values is that we accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. So we're announcing the schedule of the Awakening Together Satsang Retreat, September 12th to 14th. In 2014, at the Old Mission in Santa Barbara, California, with Timothy Conway, Magdi, and Kirtana, and facilitated by Regina Don Akers. So now is the time to schedule your transportation to Santa Barbara for September the 12th, and to sign up for the retreat using the form on our website. So here's the schedule. The check-in is on September 12th from 3 to 6 p.m., and the retreat begins with dinner at 6 p.m. Magdi is presenting Friday evening and Saturday morning, and Timothy Conway presents Saturday afternoon and Sunday morning. The Kirtana music concert and the satsang is Saturday evening. And then the retreat ends with lunch at noon on Sunday. Then, if you'll be staying for the second retreat, the Awakening Together Soak in the Beauty retreat, which is September 14 to 18, with Regina Don Akers, Nikki Dobson, and Timothy Conway. And you'll spend mornings, including breakfast and lunch, in silence, moving about at the Franciscan Monastery with 13 acres of courtyards, beautiful gardens, and open lawns. Then after lunch, you will board a bus for a local location of beauty. On Monday, you will visit the Santa Barbara Botanical Gardens. On Tuesday, you'll visit local beaches. And Wednesday, you'll visit another local site. After dinner each evening, you will meet for a discussion. And on Sunday evening, you will watch Brother Sun, Sister Moon, the movie, and discuss the spiritual teaching in that film. On Monday and Wednesday evening, there will be a satsang, either Monday or Wednesday, I'm not sure which. There will be a satsang with Timothy Conway. So, let's have a little music to begin our service this morning. One of the presenters at the Santa Barbara Satsang Retreat is the musician Kirtana. And here she is singing, I Am.
If for the body, if for the story, if for the name, beyond the words, attempt to find or explain. Before the breath, beyond the sense of pleasure or of pain. And after death, and after death, I am. In the heart, the whole and part of everything I see. Behind the eyes, beyond the skies, reflecting me. The silent core, yet before phenomena began. Oh, and after it, and after it, I am. Many differences separate us on the surface. But I cannot find a boundary in consciousness. When you ask me, does awareness begin and does it end? within the body, without the body, not subject to changing needs, states of health, points of view. Without needs, before the deed and the monuments of man, below and after them, and after them, a boundary in consciousness. When you ask me, where does awareness begin and does it end? I have to see, I have to see, I've always been. Silent core, yet before phenomenon began. Well, I'm after it, after it.
So now it's time for our invocation. Let us join our hearts and our minds for our invocation. This morning we'll just have a moment of silence for the invocation. And you may use this time to reflect on the gratitude that you feel in your own heart. Amen. We'll now have an inspirational reading by a member. Our reader today is Judy Frisk, and Judy will be reading from the Loving Eyes of God chapter from Michael Singer's book, The Untethered Soul. Okay, here you go, Judy.
The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer.
The Loving Eyes of God. As you let go and willingly release the physical, emotional, and mental aspects of your being, spirit becomes your state. You don't claim to understand what is happening to you. You just know that as you go further and further back, it gets more and more beautiful. You naturally begin to experience the vibrations that were described by the great saints and sages of different traditions. You realize that you too can have deep spiritual experiences and be in the spirit of the Lord's day. Revelations 1. But ultimately, how do you really know anything about God? How can you ever know about what is beyond you? You know because those who have gone beyond have come back and said that the spirit you're experiencing is the doorway to God. When they let go of the lower aspects of their being, they experienced just what you're experiencing. They felt tremendous love, spirit, and light waking up inside of them. They felt that nothing could come in through their senses that was higher than what was already going on inside. They drifted further and further back and got higher and higher. Then one day, all of a sudden, they weren't there. There was no sense of I experiencing the love and light. There was only the ultimate expansiveness of their sense of self merging into the love and light like a single drop of water merging into the ocean. When the drop of consciousness that knows itself as an individual drifts back far enough, it becomes like the drop that falls into the ocean. The Atman, soul, falls into the Paramatman, supreme soul. The individual consciousness falls into the universal oneness, and that's it. When that happens, people say interesting things like, I and my Father are one, from John 10. And the words that I speak unto you, I speak not of myself, but the Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works, from John 14. They all spoke like that. They said they had merged and that there was no differentiation within the universal oneness of God. The drop of consciousness, which is individual spirit, is like a ray of light emanating from the sun. The individual ray is really no different from the sun. When consciousness stops identifying itself as the ray, it comes to know itself as the sun. Beings have merged into that state. In the mystical Gospel of John, Christ says, that they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be one in us, I in them, and thou in me, that they may be made perfect in one. From John 17. So it was taught in the Hindu Vedas, so it was taught in the Jewish Kabbalah, so it was written by the great Sufi mystic poets, and so it was taught in all the great religious traditions of all time. Such a state exists. One can merge into the universal absolute. One can merge into God. This is how you know something about God. You become one with Him. Ultimately, the only way to know about God is by letting your being merge into the being and then seeing what happens to you. This is universal consciousness, and the qualities of the beings who have attained this deep state are similar in every religion. What happens to one who walks this path toward God? What transformations do they go through along the way? To understand this, imagine what would happen if you started feeling tremendous love for all creatures, for every plant, for every animal, and for all the beauties of nature. Imagine if every child seemed like your own, and every person you saw looked like a beautiful flower with its own color, its own expression, shape, and sounds. As you went deeper and deeper, you would start noticing a phenomenal thing. You were no longer judging. The process of judging has simply stopped. There is just appreciating and honoring. Where there used to be judging, there is now respecting, loving, and cherishing. To differentiate is to judge. To see, to experience, and to honor is to participate in life instead of standing back and judging it. When you walk through a beautiful botanical garden, you feel open and light. You feel love. You see beauty. You don't judge the shape and placement of every leaf. The leaves are all sizes and shapes, and they face every which way. That's what makes them beautiful. What if you felt that way about people? What if they didn't all have to dress the same, believe the same, or behave the same? What if they were like the flowers, and however they happened to be, seemed beautiful to you? If that happened, you'd get a glimpse of God. That's the best way to know God. Watch what happens to you as you get closer to Him. It's really the only way you can know anything about God. If you try to read about God in a book, you'll find five other books that say the opposite. Better yet, you'll find five interpretations of the same book. Somebody writes something and somebody else gets a PhD proving it wrong. If you move your search for God down to the mental level, somebody will dispute it. It's all part of the mind game. You can't know God that way. It must come from actual experience. That's what happens to you when you meditate. That's what happens when you let go of your lower self. You drift into spirit, and as you drift into spirit, these transformations take place within you. All you have to do is notice them, and you will start to notice the tendency toward the qualities of the divine. The further back you go, the more you will see these natural qualities unfolding inside of you. Each step along the way, you get a clearer glimpse of what it must be like to sit in that divine state.
Thank you, Judy. That was the Loving Eyes of God from The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. In the Loving Eyes of God, Judy read, "The only way that you can know anything about God is to merge into God. You become one with Him. You know about God by letting your being merge into the being and then see what happens to you. This is universal consciousness, and the qualities of the beings who have attained this deep state are similar in every religion. Teach only love, for that's what you are, A Course in Miracles." This morning I'm going to venture outside the box here and question virtually every belief on the planet, including the belief that there is a planet. There is voluminous evidence that our physical bodies are mere fictions. They are mirages whose needs and limits are imaginary. In reality, we have always been alive and always will be. Birth, death, and disease do not really exist, and neither does time nor space. War, poverty, pollution, and politics are also illusions. Further, there is only one of us. We think we are separated, but despite how real our separateness may seem, we are not divided into several billion bodies struggling for survival on this little sphere spinning through space. Our reality is love. Nothing more and nothing less. Everything else is but a dream. This is the literal truth, and although it may seem like an empty science or religious rant, at first, we are being exposed to its solid understandings. The clear evidence is before us. We no longer need raw faith. And to back us up, we have one, our own, what we might call unusual experiences. Two, the latest in scientific discoveries, including quantum physics. And three, a library of books dictated through channels. Books such as A Course in Miracles, Journey Beyond Words, The Other Voice, The Way of Mastery, NTI, and many, many others. We are finding the true source of miracles here. Our inner peace produces richer relationships as our lives become easier and more fulfilling. We notice how resentments fade while laughter takes over, and how health improves as the anxieties of the world shift in meaning. Here's a description of one level of this state from A Course in Miracles. It's found in the workbook, Lesson 155. There is a way of living in the world that is not here, although it seems to be. You do not change appearance, though you smile more frequently. Your forehead is serene. Your eyes are quiet. And the ones who walk the world as you do recognize their own. Yet those who have not yet perceived the way will recognize you also and believe that you are like them, as you were before. The world is an illusion. Those who choose to come to it are seeking for a place where they can be illusions and avoid their own reality. Yet, when they find their own reality is even here, then they step back and let it lead the way. What other choice is really theirs to make? To let illusion walk ahead of truth is madness. But to let illusion sink behind the truth and let the truth stand forth as what it is merely sanity. We are entering an extraordinary experience. So let's look at the evidence, the first of which I will call our unusual experiences category, starting with spiritual awakening. A Course in Miracles calls it a revelation. Many have shared their unusual experiences, but few discuss them in public. Why? Because the general public finds them difficult to understand. Those we tell have nothing in their belief systems to make sense of these stories, and so they tend to politely roll their eyes and do little or nothing with this startling message they just heard. There is an overwhelming number of people who have experienced an unusual experience. Multitudes of people have described the moment of their awakening. Many people speak about a low point in their lives when they simply surrendered in despair and seemed to be visited or rescued by a supernatural force that is transforming in a sudden shift of consciousness or awareness. Or sometimes it's just a gradual shift. Eckhart Tolle's nightmare became unbearable, and that triggered the separation of consciousness from its identification with form. He woke up and suddenly realized himself as the I Am and was deeply peaceful. Byron Katie remembers this moment as a cockroach crawled across her foot. Prince Siddhartha, the Buddha, sat under a Bodhi tree, faced east, and vowed not to move from that place until he had attained awakening. Ramana Maharshi laid down and experienced what he calls a death of the body experience. Quoting the Taoist Lao Tzu, "To know is not to know. not to know is to know. And one who knows speaks not. One who speaks knows not. It's a shift in consciousness. From A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle, I quote, "Awakening is a shift in consciousness in which thinking and awareness separate. For most people, it is not an event, but a process they undergo. Instead of being lost in your thinking, when you are awake, you recognize yourself as the awareness behind it. Thinking then ceases to be self-serving, autonomous activity that takes possession of you and runs your life. Awareness takes over from thinking. Instead of being in charge of your life, thinking becomes the servant of awareness. Awareness is conscious connection with universal intelligence. Another word for it is presence, consciousness without thought." End quote. The central goal of A Course in Miracles is namely to remove the blocks to the awareness of love's presence. Quantum physics points to this experience in terms with terms such as a field of infinite intelligence, while A Course in Miracles calls it a revelation. I guess you could also call it God. In this spiritual state, there is nothing, neither birth nor death, nor is there hunger, poverty, war, disease, or any other limitations of life that show up in our land of separate bodies. In fact, in this space, these things are impossible. Instead, there's only a deep awareness of intense love that is far beyond anything experienced on earth. That's because it is not of this earth. Here's how A Course in Miracles describes this state, found in the workbook Lesson 107. "Can you imagine what a state of mind without illusions is? How would it feel? Try to remember when there was a time, perhaps a minute, maybe even less, when nothing came to interrupt your peace, when you were certain you were loved and safe. Then, try to picture what it would be like to have that moment be extended to the end of time and to eternity. Then, let the sense of quiet that you felt be multiplied 100 times. And then be multiplied another 100 more. And now you have a hint, not more than just the faintest intimation, of the state of mind will rest in when the truth has come. This state creates an invulnerability because no weapon or calamity of any kind can touch it. This also means we live forever. Although forever is kind of a strange term here, because in time, this does not exist. There's only an ecstatic now. Neither yesterday nor tomorrow exist. Further, you do not need to worry about what other individuals think of you, because there are no other individuals. There is only a spiritual oneness within which we are all joined and belong in a state of ecstasy. You may have had this unusual experience, and your fondest desire was to stay there. But alas, you soon come back to this nonsensical mirage that we call the world. But your life has changed ever since. Now, skeptics might ask, how do you know this, your experience wasn't just a delusion? To which I would respond, how do you know that your experience of life in a separated body isn't just a delusion? Therein lies the seeds of a great debate between those who have experienced this phenomenon and those who have not, although you have every right to be skeptical, experience shows the existence of this state and how it can be achieved, or at least approached, by all of us. Indeed, we must enter such a path because it is our answer to war and disease and poverty and the like. The second evidence we have is recent scientific discoveries. We are saying that our senses are deceiving us and that our true reality has nothing to do with bodies that deteriorate and die. The evidence that our senses deceives us goes back to when we learned that our eyes and other senses perceive only a tiny fraction of our physical existence. If, for example, the entire electromagnetic spectrum stretched for 3,000 miles from Los Angeles to New York, our eyes would only detect an amount equal to the length of one of our arms, the visible spectrum. And all the rest of it, 99.999999%, is lost from our everyday awareness. Similarly, our ears hear only a tiny portion of the entire sound spectrum. And in the same way, our feelings and tastes and smells are severely limited. Yet we think our minuscule senses are giving us reality. Our lives, our belief systems, our politics, science, relationships are all based on that tiny percent that our senses perceive. The rest is ignored. And where's the intelligence in that? If our entire reality was equivalent to a sea of possibilities, we spend our lives floating on the surface of that sea in dinky little tubs, completely unaware of the vast grandeur that surrounds us. Fortunately, the way out is given to us through both quantum physics and A Course in Miracles. Let's start with quantum physics. Quantum physics takes us on a journey beyond our senses. Science has found the revelation and opened the door to a massive ocean of possibilities. It's a kind of quantum soup of waves before observation turns it into particles of form. First, Albert Einstein told us about a century ago that everything, including our bodies, is made of energy. That was an outside our senses discovery because we appear to be solid forms, not vibrating energy packets. Later, a new science known as quantum physics emerged. It is the story of very small things, quanta, on an atomic scale, and as such explores fascinating phenomena that are well beyond our five senses. And because we are made of atoms, it is also the study of our physical reality. This is a godsend, literally, because these studies have become our scientific eyes and ears into the mysteries underlying our existence. They point the way out of our tiny tubs so that we can learn to swim in that sea of possibilities. It takes people with Einstein's intelligence and background to properly explore the extraordinary messages of quantum physics. Unfortunately, the findings from this complex science were summarized in a film known as What the Bleep, Down the Rabbit Hole. It includes statements from some of the most prominent scientists of our time, such as Candace Pert, William Tiller, Joe Dispenza, Lynn McTaggart, John Hagelin, David Alpert, Amit Goswami, Dane Radin, Fred Allen Wolf. Well, I'm just going to list a few of their conclusions. But note the common theme that we are not separate. It says, at the most fundamental level of our being, we are all one, and that oneness is love. It is God. We are not separate from each other or from anything else in the universe. Our senses tell us otherwise, of course, but that's an illusion. All our worldly problems can be reduced to the perceptual error that we think we are separate. The world, as we see it, is a projection of our own beliefs and separateness. We are conditioned to believe this because our limited senses deceive us. There is nothing outside ourselves, and everything our eyes see is an illusion. We have projected our own beliefs onto the world's screen and are acting according to our own erroneous projections. There is no out there. Time and space do not exist. They are merely conditions of our own minds to help us make sense of our erroneous belief in separateness. We owe endless gratitude to these dedicated scientists because they have revealed to us a world of vast possibilities that is rightfully ours. Properly understood, their gifts are unparalleled in history. But their findings lack one thing. They show us what is possible, but they do not show us how to get there. Well, that gap is beautifully filled by A Course in Miracles. And so we come to the third evidence. A Course in Miracles is a spiritual document that mirrors quantum physics. The timing of this is fascinating. Quantum physics and A Course in Miracles have appeared at approximately the same time in history. Both point clearly to the illusion of separateness, but choose different methods to bring this idea to the world. Quantum physics does so through hard science and mathematics, while A Course in Miracles takes a softer, more spiritual route. Neither approach relies on the other, but both come to the identical conclusions. The world we seem to live in is like a dream, a fiction. Our senses are deceiving us and thus hiding this far greater reality from our awareness. Our senses report a world filled with pain, and yet, despite how convincing it all seems, none of it is real. It is a perpetual distraction machine, a spiritual error that is obscuring a joyous reality where nothing exists except love. For evidence of this dream, let's go back to where quantum physics tells us that this world that we think we occupy doesn't really exist. It is an illusion. There is no time, space, nor separation. All atoms are connected within a oneness of which we are all a part. There is only one of us. There is no out there. It's all coming from in here, in our mind. Remember that quantum physics involves the intricate study of atoms, the ultimate building blocks of our bodies and everything else that we perceive in this world. As such, it is literally the study of the physical foundation of our existence. Since all atoms are connected, it is impossible for the atoms to be separate from all the rest of the atoms and form a separate object, like a tree. And the same goes for our bodies, bugs, buildings, everything else our senses detect. Separation cannot be. it is impossible. A Course in Miracles echoes the same idea. It says, the world you see has nothing to do with reality. It is of your own making and does not exist. That's in the workbook, lesson 14. This, of course, violates every belief we have. Our every sensory input proves the existence of the world in that we see and hear and feel and smell and taste the separate things of the world. And so we do this 24/7. And since our senses appear to be our only tangible connection to reality, we have little choice but to dutifully obey their dictates. Or do we? Fortunately, we also have a sixth sense, a knowing or intuition that there is more to our existence than what our senses report. So now we have a fork in the road, where we can either stay within the prison house of our own sensory inputs, or adopt the idea that we are having a dream, a perpetual error. And the world doesn't really exist. A Course in Miracles has some interesting insights on this. It draws from our nighttime dreams for a comparison. In chapter 18 of the Course, it says, does not a world that seems quite real arise in dreams? Yet, think what this world is. It is clearly not a world you saw before you slept. You do not find the differences between what you see in sleep and on awakening disturbing. You recognize that what you see on waking is blotted out in dreams. And in chapter 10 of the text, we read, you recognize from your own experience that what you see in dreams you think is real while you're asleep. Yet, the instant you awaken, you realize that everything that seemed to happen in the dream did not happen at all. You do not think this strange, even though all the laws of what you awakened to were violated while you slept. Is it not possible that you merely shifted from one dream to another without really waking? Think about it. When you have a dream at night, isn't reality as you know it violated profusely? Only when we awaken from this dream do we see the absurdity of it and say to ourselves, oh, it was just a dream. However, while you are dreaming, don't the experiences seem very real? Do you even question the reality of those events while they are happening in your dream? Most people don't. In fact, if we attached monitoring devices to our bodies while dreaming, we would detect substantial changes in our heartbeat, adrenaline flow, and other bodily reactions. All these point to the seeming reality of our sleeping dream. So it's time to ask the question, are we dreaming now? Could this world we are experiencing without our senses be nothing more than a dream to which quantum physics and A Course in Miracles point? And when we awaken, will we not look back on this dream and say, oh, it was just a dream? I can give you an emphatic yes to these questions. Our true reality is not contained within the illusory world. Rather, its center is in that exquisite state of love that exists in the world beyond our senses. True forgiveness completely wipes the slate clean. As long as we truly recognize everything that happens is part of the dream, then we have no traumas, betrayals, diseases, or enemies. all such happenings become fictitious and have no effect on us. They seem very real and within the dream, of course, but if we awaken, we recognize them for the non-events they really are. The world within our senses gives us constant reminders of the dangers lurking all about us, even though, as quantum physics tells us, it's all imaginary. There is no out there. There are two ways that the Course in Miracles puts it. There is nothing to forgive. The workbook, Lesson 22, says, "What could you want forgiveness cannot give? Do you want peace? Forgiveness offers it. Do you want happiness, a quiet mind, a certainty of purpose, a sense of worth and beauty that transcends the world? Do you want care and safety and the warmth of sure protection always? Do you want a quietness that cannot be disturbed, a gentleness that cannot be hurt, a deep, abiding comfort and a rest so perfect that it can never be upset? All this forgiveness offers you, and more. It sparkles on your eyes as you awake and gives you joy with which to meet the day. It soothes your forehead while you are asleep and rests upon your eyelids so that you see no dreams of fear and evil, malice and attack. And when you wake again, it offers you another day of happiness and peace. All this forgiveness offers you, and more. There is only one of us. The world within our senses, the sensory world, insists that there are billions of us inhabiting this planet, and all of us are unique. So when we come across people we don't like, we are actually experiencing reflections of things that we don't like about ourselves. If we are all one, then you are these people, and they are you. If those who irritate us are actually part of us, then we must see beyond their shortcomings if we are to perceive ourselves as love. Spiritual love is all-encompassing. There can be nothing else. This is where true forgiveness comes in. We must learn that this sensory world is nothing but a dream, and unloving behavior of everyone is but a fiction. With that realization, true forgiveness becomes easier, because ultimately there is nothing to forgive. And if there is nothing to forgive, then the slate is clean, and we are left with a glorious state of loving oneness. No resentments, no judgments, just love. Now is the time in our worship service schedule for our open meditation or contemplation. This is also the time that we remind you that Awakening Together is supported by your donations. And we hope that you value the assembly and choose to support it with financial contributions. Donating is always a choice and not required, but if your heart gives you or guidance to make a donation now or commit to a monthly subscription donation, click on the link on our website, donate, and we thank you.
Why do you seek the palace of these ways?
So now we have about 10 minutes for sharing, and I invite you to share your thoughts based on today's teaching. So just raise your hand, and I will pass the mic over to you. Thank you, Regina. The mic is yours.
Hi, Phil. Hi, everyone. This morning when you were speaking, Phil, what you were saying was merging in my mind along with today's daily quote, which is a Magdi quote. I'll start by reading that quote for anyone who hasn't seen it yet. When you are attached to your body, when you are attached to the world, you perpetuate the illusion of separation. In the dream, be as light as a feather. You are the unaffected, aware presence that takes on all forms while remaining completely free. Attachment is a psychological contraction. There is no happiness in it. You love the happiness, so choose the happiness and remain with the happiness without reverting to the I thought. You used the word perpetual as well this morning while you were speaking. Magdi talks about, again, when you are attached to your body or when you are attached to the world, you perpetuate the illusion of separation. And you said something, I could probably scroll back up and find it because I quoted it when you said it. Let's see. Oh, you called, I don't know if it was the world, or I think you called the world a perpetual distraction machine. You also, you know, you and Judy together, you shared from Michael Singer's book. You know, all of these pieces have kind of collided together for me. So first I'm sharing all of the pieces that have collided together. But as many people know, around December 20th of 2013, I took a vow of happiness. And I took that vow of happiness while reading Michael Singer's book. I saw happiness as a path of awakening that I am ready for. But I also have come to see happiness as, for lack of better words, I'm going to call it an important energy. Because, you know, when we look at the world, this perpetual distraction machine, as you called it, and we get upset by what we see, since the world is a reflection of the mind, the very things that are upsetting to us continue to be perpetuated through our being upset. And happiness is the undoing of that, as well as happiness being our natural state. So we're kind of abiding as ourselves when we choose to be happy. And I think sometimes people don't understand, well, how can you be happy when there's so many things in the world, you know, that are messed up? And again, you have to remember that the world is a reflection of the mind, and you have to remember that the world is a perpetual distraction machine, and you have to choose to be happy because mind is the cause. So you're really working at the level of cause instead of working at the level of effect. And just choosing to be happy with what is. And sometimes for me, being happy with what is means being happy with energies that, you know, we don't describe as happy. You know, like yesterday I was playing golf for the second time in my life on a golf course. And I noticed that when I went to play golf, you know, there was a little bit of stress there. There was stress there because this stroke counts. You have stress that doesn't exist on the driving range because, oh, you know, this stroke counts. But I also noticed that stress for me was a very, very surface level stress. Like it wasn't the type of stress I used to feel, which upset my happiness. The happiness was still present. The happiness is something I've decided to allow constantly, so that even in that moment of fear, there was noticing there was fear, there was noticing why there was fear, there was noticing that there was a belief, this counts, this moment matters. And then there was just a breathing, a releasing, and a swinging, but what was primarily there was a decision that happiness is what's most important. And not becoming distracted by the perpetual distraction machine, as you called it, regardless of whether that's a golf game or whether that's a war. Because whenever we get caught up in that, we share in that energy. And it just seems like it's a loop. You know, again, perpetual. It's a loop that continues to make the exact appearances that none of us desire. And so it seems to me that learning to be, as Magdi called today, light as a feather, learning to just be happy with what is, even if I'm being happy right now with my own little bit of stress that's arising, it seems like that is the way out of this distraction. It seems like that is the way out of this illusion and back to our true self, which is perfect happiness. And that's it. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Regina. Beautiful sharing. Thank you so much for being here, for listening to what I said, and for conveying those thoughts so well in response to the message this morning. So we have another 4 or 5 minutes, and Lynn, I see your hand is up, so the mic is yours.
Thank you so much, Phil, and yes, thank you for your beautiful message this morning. And what I see, this happiness, I have a grandson who is 11 months old, and he is happy. He has no reason not to be happy. When he gets unhappy, when something he drops something he wants, or he wants something he didn't get, or whatever, he cries like a maniac. But but he's just joyful, happy and joyful, laughing and just having a wonderful time. And every time something, you know, anything changes, anything, he sees something new, his eyes light up and he gets so excited and he looks at you like, do you see this? How cool this is? That is our natural state. That's how God made us. To be just joyful about everything. Not to get unhappy when we drop things, because in God's world, nothing gets dropped. But as I watch this baby, he's teaching me how to be happy. He's teaching me how to just look at everything like I don't know what it is. Just like Jesus tells us in the lessons in the Course. Look at everything like I don't know what it is. And just be joyful to see it, to learn what it is. And as I'm doing this, I'm watching my ego. And I'm watching my ego trying to help me do it. Where it used to be that my ego just wanted to stop me from doing everything, now it's really trying to help me do it. And I think I've reached a real turning point here. It's just the most amazing thing, and I'm just so joyful. But I see that Robbie has his hand up, so I'm going to let go of the mic and let's hear what he has to say. Hooray!
Aloha. Thank you, Phil. And Regina, you brought up golf, which is funny because I have a huge charge on golf. I've tried to, maybe that's the key word, I've tried to, but I think it's the whole idea of having to do it, feeling the shoulds, feeling like I have to do it right. And everybody's trying to teach me, and I have to take about 15 balls with me because they all go in the lake or the sand trap. And it's that whole thing of doing it right that just obviously my should buttons, my approval buttons get pushed. And so thank you for helping me push my button, even thinking of golf. But yeah, there is a book called The Zen of Golf, which is the whole principle of Course in Miracles, which is accepting what is. And acceptance is happiness, is in my, how I understand it anyway. And there are times I can make myself miserable by playing golf. And there are times that I have actually had fun, because it's just kind of a silly hitting this ball around the course. And I read why it got started in Scotland, or where it got started. I think it was even somewhere different than Scotland, but it is interesting if you Google it. But, you know, the whole thing, feeling like I have to do it perfect. So I'll work on that today. Thank you, Regina, and thank you, Phil and Lynn and Dove and everyone in here. Good to be here.
Well, thank you, Robbie. Appreciate your comments. So now I will play our closing song. Another song by Katrina, Be Free. Thank you. I'd like to thank you all for being here today. Thanks to our reading assistant, Judy Frisk, and to our administrator, Barbara Water. Please stay and join us for an hour of fellowship right here, right now, in this room. And now I turn the mic back to you, Lynn.
We'd get it almost every night when that moon gets so big and bright. It's a supernatural delight. Every border was dancing in the moonlight. Everybody here is out of sight, but they don't bark and they don't bite. They keep things loose, they keep
dancing in the moonlight last night. Oh, woo! Not me, because it was raining. But it would have been fun, though. I remember doing that many, many, many times when I was a youngster. I'll tell you what, up here in Colorado, when the moon is full, it's beautiful. And, you know, we would go up in, you know, in the woods and, like,